Excellency Mr. Konrote, President of Fiji, Excellency Mr. Da Silva, Director General of FAO, dear colleagues and friends. 2,000 years ago, province after province around the Mediterranean was turned to desert by the rapid expansion of the Roman Empire and an urgent need for food, fuel, and shelter. And that reminded me of a quote by a French philosopher called René de Chateaubriand, who once wrote, "Forest precedes civilizations and deserts follow them." It seems our civilizations has not progressed that far since 2,000 years. Every 60 seconds, we cut down 15 hectares of forest primarily to make room for food or energy production. Between 1990 and 2015, the world has lost some 113 million hectares of forest, an area the size of South Africa. So when we take away the forest, it is not just the trees that go. The entire ecosystem begins to fall apart, with dire consequences for all of us. In terms of climate change and the water cycle, certainly, but also in terms of future energy provisions. Deforestation and forest degradation are responsible for over 17% of all man-made greenhouse gas emissions. For now, some 260 gigatons of carbons are stored in the world's forests in both above and below ground biomass. But for how long? The need for food, fuel, and shelter is still turning forests to deserts every day. For every million kilos of beef exported from South America, some 45,000 hectares of rainforest are cleared. And in many low-income countries, fuel wood is still the most important forest product. It represents 93% of the total harvested wood. The 300 million people who live in forests worldwide are counting on us to break the spiral of forest loss and degradation while allowing people to eat and have access to the energy, water, and income the forest provides. So how might we approach this? In my mind, we can manage the trade-off better, in particular, getting the choice right where land use, water, and energy collide. The time for small-scale pilot projects is coming to an end. We know that sustainable, efficient technologies and alternatives to charcoal and fuel wood work if they are in the hands of the consumers. Our biofuel and hydroelectric strategies, while well-meaning, can sometimes be low carbon, but not truly sustainable or friendly to the forest or to the land. We can reflect a little bit more, perhaps, on those unintended consequences and revisit how we approach these strategies. While if we shift our consumption patterns and sustainably manage and rehabilitate the degraded land we have outside forests, there will be less pressure for agriculture expansion into forests. I'd like to see techniques like agroforestry go mainstream, for example. Above all, a new integrated way of doing business is something that will benefit everyone. The 105 countries which are participating today in the land degradation neutrality target setting program with UNCCD account, for example, represent more than 55% of the global forest cover of the world. Just these 105 countries have lost 64 million hectares of forests between 1990 and 2015. most of these countries will include specific forest-based targets, such as increasing the amount of forested area or its productivity in their LDN target. We would love to be working with you, indeed with all forestry stakeholders, to get the land, forest, and energy communities working together to get SDG 15 and SDG 7 delivered together. Man-made deserts should not follow mankind's so-called civilization. I very much welcome the day the forest community will put me out of a job. Thank you.
It is indeed a great pleasure for me to launch today our new publication on greening the charcoal value chain to mitigate climate change and improve livelihoods. This publication links the theme of the International Day of Forests, Forests and Energy, with one of our biggest global challenges we are facing today, and that is climate change. Now, wood energy has been used for millennia, in fact, ever since man discovered fire, and it's still a very important source of energy today. Allow me just to recall that forests provide fuel for heating, cooking, and industrial needs, and protects watersheds to enable hydroelectric generation. As we have already heard, 50% of global wood production is used for energy. 2.4 billion people worldwide use wood fuel to cook their meals, sterilize drinking water, and heat their homes. And wood fuel provides 40% of today's global renewable energy supply, which is as much as solar, hydroelectric, and wind power combined. Now, traditional wood energy consists of firewood and charcoal mainly, while modern sources of wood energy include pellets, liquid biofuels, among others. About 17% of all the wood used for fuel is converted to charcoal, which is used in many urban centers in developing countries because it is easier to transport and to store than wood. In many developing countries, especially in Africa, charcoal production and trade is an important economic activity of the rural poor and generates income for about 40 million people. Overall, global charcoal production has been steadily increasing, and the strongest increase has been in Africa. It is expected that this trend will continue, at least in the near future, mainly due to population growth and because alternatives may not be readily available or may be less affordable in many parts of the world. There are, however, a number of challenges associated with the current production and use of charcoal, and the Director General mentioned already some of them in his speech. Unsustainable wood harvesting for production of charcoal leads to forest degradation and in some cases also to deforestation. Charcoal manufacture is mostly carried out using rudimentary and inefficient kilns that may require up to 12 kilos of wood to produce 1 kilo of charcoal. Combustion is also often highly inefficient. The traditional stoves have an efficiency rate of about 12 to 25%, while improved stoves can reach at least 40%. Such rudimentary and inefficient stoves also cause another problem, and that is smoke pollution, which poses a significant health risk for women who cook indoors. And much of the charcoal production takes place in the informal sector and may even be illegal. Therefore, governments lose revenue from taxes and permits. And finally, the traditional value chain is a net greenhouse gas emitter due to the unsustainable production and the inefficiencies. So what needs to be done to improve the charcoal value chain? Different interventions are needed at different stages. For more sustainable wood production, forests need to be managed sustainably. That means not harvesting more than grows back. Alternatively, other sources such as agricultural waste or wood residues can be used. Or, for example, charcoal dust, which is a byproduct of charcoal production, can be used to make briquettes. For decarbonization, improved kilns with higher efficiencies should be used. In terms of transportation, short transportation distances save fuel, and decarbonization sites should be close to the sites where the wood is produced. And to get more efficient and cleaner combustion, improved stoves are indispensable. If these actions are taken, significant reductions of greenhouse gas emissions can be achieved. Now, the reductions from sustainable wood sourcing and the use of residues are quite variable and difficult to estimate as they depend on many factors, but they can be quite high. For the process of carbonization, a reduction of up to 80% is possible. With improved stoves, up to 63% reduction can be achieved. And if simultaneous interventions are taken along the value chain, the reduction can be as high as 86%. The publication concludes with a number of recommendations for greening the charcoal value chain. The first one is to target the whole value chain in order to achieve the highest impact. As we have seen, the highest reductions of emissions can be achieved that way. Developing comprehensive policy frameworks across sectors for a sustainable charcoal value chain, and particularly between the forests and the energy sectors. Making the charcoal value chain a specific component of the country's nationally determined contributions for mitigating climate change. Ensuring financial viability by reforming tenure to increase legal access to resources, by putting a fair price on wood, by incentivizing sustainable practices and attracting investment. And finally, supporting stakeholders through research, provision of reliable data, and sharing of success stories. So what is FAO doing? The 21st and 22nd sessions of COFO and the 20th session of the African Forest and Wildlife Commission made a number of recommendations that now form the basis of FAO's plan of action to support countries in greening their charcoal value chains. This includes support to developing targeted and holistic policies that promote the access to sustainable and modern energy services, improving the availability and reliability of data related to the wood fuel sector in national as well as international statistics, and taking initiatives on life cycle assessment to optimize the uses of wood in the context of sustainable development. It also includes supporting countries in cross-sectoral communication and collaboration to support sustainable sourcing, efficient production and consumption, and effectively regulated trading. Information and knowledge sharing and technology innovation and transfer. And finally, putting the actions into the broader context of FAO's strategic framework and of the Sustainable Development Goals, including the implications for food security, rural livelihoods, bioenergy, land use, and others. I thank you very much for your attention.
Excellency, President Fiji, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to give you an industrial view and an example of forest-based products and energy innovation. So a Northern Finnish view perspective. To begin with, just a couple of charts. Here you see the industrial wood utilization, which is concentrated upon softwood forest zones, so in the north. And in the north, the wood use is mostly industrial, and in the south, it is mostly used for fuel, as we heard already before. Also, what you can see from this picture is that the allowable annual cut, or the annual increment, and the harvest in many areas are already quite close to each other. Other picture is about the renewable energy share of global energy consumption, where the renewables is about 19%, and the biomass share is 14%. And the forest biomass is the biggest part of this. And it is mainly used for heating, both at home and also industrial use. My company, Metsä Group, Metsä means forest in Finnish. It is about 5 billion euro turnover company with 9,000 people. And the unique thing is that the parent company is a cooperative. So we are basically owned by Finnish private forest owners. And the businesses that we are in today are here, wood supply and forest services. So we offer a lot of forest services for sustainable forest management for our owners. Also, we are a big producer of softwood pulp and sawn timber, wood products for wood construction, paperboard for packaging, tissue and cooking papers. And these are all growing businesses, and we are also growing. So we are investing about 2 billion euros during a couple of years in this industry. And next to the products you can see here, we also are a significant producer of renewable energy. So 22.3 terawatt hours represents about 14% of the Finnish renewable energy. At the moment, we are building a bioproduct mill in Äänekoski, which is in central Finland. And that is the forest industry's biggest investment in Finland and in Europe. The value is 1.2 billion euros, and the core will be the pulp mill, which is producing pulp, 1.3 million tons. But the new thing is that there is an integrated production of new bioproducts. Uses 6.5 million cubic meters wood, and there will be a unique industrial ecosystem around it for these bioproducts. And the mill will be ramped up during the third quarter this year. And in the picture you can see already the industrial park in Äänekoski, and the yellow piles are the wood chips of the new bioproduct mill. Also, you see a lot of forest and a lot of water that we have in Finland. Now, when starting to plan this investment, we wanted really to go towards a carbon-neutral society. And our philosophy starts by the fact that the wood should primarily be used for long or longest lifetime products that can substitute fossil raw materials. And in the pictures there, of course, is the longest lifetime, which is the buildings, wood construction, also packaging, and then some cooking papers. And the cornerstones of the bioproduct mill in the designing it have been minimizing its energy usage and also maximizing efficiency. And the mill actually will be 240% self-sufficient in electricity and completely fossil-free, so no fossil fuels used. Now, we need energy at the mill, and for this we use sustainable renewable energy that comes from the industrial side streams. And also, there's so much of this energy that it will be supplying for the needs of the society too. And this is the concept, the bioproduct concept, which means that all side streams will be 100% utilized. So starting from the left, so there will be 6.5 million cubic meters pulpwood coming into the pulping process. And because there's only about 50% of fibers in the tree, so there will be quite a lot of different side streams. And what we do with them is, for example, that bark will be used for product gas, and that we use to replace earth gas, a natural gas in the lime kiln. And also there will be some other energy products made of bark. Turpentine and tall oil are the existing side byproducts of pulp making, and turpentine, for example, for the ladies to know, can also be used in fragrance as a fragrant, really. And tall oil is a chemical industry raw material. Then from the odorous gases that contain sulfur, we will make sulfuric acid that we need in making tall oil. And this will be a very nice example of circular economy, because then we don't need to buy sulfuric acid from external. A lot of research ongoing with the lignin, to make it, for example, as an adhesive. Not much to tell yet, but will come. And then interestingly, and also related to this energy issue, is the sludge. So there will be an external company that will produce biogas from the wastewater sludge, and that will be used for traffic fuels. And then dregs and ashes, maybe it's good to tell you an example here, that the ashes of the wood so will also go back to the forest as a forest fertilizer. Bioenergy will be produced the existing way, so the so-called black liquor. And then, interestingly, the completely new value chains and new uses for pulp, for example, new textile fibers and also biocomposites. And also you can see in the picture the textile filaments and the one scarf made of wood. Next to the products, so also a lot of renewable energy, as you already heard and we'll see here. So in different places of the mill there will be energy produced, and it will altogether be about 9.6 terawatt hours, both electricity and heat. So United Nations has predicted that there will be 8.3 billion people in 2030, and many of them have a rising standard of living, which means also use of resources, and also there will be needed 50% more energy compared to today. So it will be very important that the renewable raw material will be used resource wisely, and also that the side streams will be utilized in a resource efficient way, and more value added is created. So the question is that will there be multiple sources for renewable energy, but shall we rather run into scarcity of biomaterials in the future? And just in the end, we think that the northern wood is very valuable and also a limited resource, so it is important to use it resource efficiently. There are versatile opportunities for bioproducts that can replace fossil-based materials. And also the natural growth of the bioeconomy is a way to increase also wood-based renewable energy.
My name is Deo Sharan. I'm the ambassador of Fiji based in Brussels and permanent delegate to FAO. My question is to Rika Joko. You mentioned in your slides, one of the interesting slides, that the increase in energy in 2030 in relative to the population. We currently have about 7.2 billion people, and it will increase to over 8 billion. So what is a massive 50% increase in the next 15 or 16 years. What is the increase in attributed to relative to the increase in the population? It seems to be exponential increase. So I'm just trying to get into terms with where is the increase coming from.
Would you like to answer it? Yes. Okay. We will take a couple of questions before we bring the questions to the podium so they have time to gather their thoughts. Other comments or questions? Yes, over there.
Muchas gracias. Felicitaciones por el evento. Realmente todas las exposiciones han sido muy interesantes. En este caso, simplemente quería hacer un aporte a una de las intervenciones, de los discursos que hemos escuchado, y es el de Monique Barbut. Hizo un pantallazo, digamos, de muchos problemas refiriéndose a algunas situaciones generales. Dentro de ello hizo una relación entre, a modo de ejemplo, entre la producción de carne en América del Sur y la deforestación. Este tipo de apreciaciones, de comentarios, son muy ilustrativos para referirnos justamente a estos problemas generales, pero se pierden las especificidades de cada país. En este caso, digo, yo solo puedo hablar por Uruguay, ya que trabajo en la Embajada del Uruguay. El caso de la producción de carne en Uruguay es, digamos, una producción basada en praderas naturales, con 100% de trazabilidad, un país que tiene un alto incremento de la producción también a nivel forestal, una recuperación e incremento de los bosques naturales y un alto, transición a la producción de energía renovable. Este aporte sencillamente es a los efectos de que este tipo de encuentros se sigan implementando, a los efectos de que se puedan compartir todas estas experiencias. En el caso de Uruguay, por supuesto que estamos dispuestos a brindar toda la información sobre estos datos que hemos dado y a su vez estamos abiertos a cualquier tipo de aportes que puedan mejorar nuestras políticas. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Thank you very much. For the benefit of the audience, if you know, you can, there's translation and you can use your headsets on your chairs to access the translation. I'll take a third question. This one was for Ms. Barbu. And I'll take a third question before I get to answering by the podium, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I think it's a more comment for Ms. Barbu also. I'm Simone Borelli. I'm the agroforestry officer at FAO, so I'm very happy to hear that agroforestry is one of the solutions, or at least one of the options for reducing land degradation. I was wondering if maybe Mr. Barbu could expand a little bit on how she would see this upscaling of agroforestry, which has always encountered quite a few difficulties due to a number of barriers, be it legal or be it related to land tenure or other aspects. So maybe she could expand a little on what her views would be on this. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will now move to the podium. We have three questions. The first one from Ms. Yokio. Press the button in the middle, yes.
Yes, okay. All right, thank you. So the question was about the growing population and how will they get the energy, and the energy that we, there will be an increase of the need. So what we kind of think is that the renewables, of course, will be the important in the future, and there will be new technologies. There are also solar, wind, wave. There are different technologies that will be the energy sources. I'm sure wood will also partly be a fuel, but as I said, so think that it is next to the product use.
Thank you. Questions 2 and 3 were for Ms. Barbu. The first one on the link between meat production and deforestation, and the second about agroforestry and whether you would like to expand on your views there. Would you please the microphone on? Thank you.
I do not think that there was any question from the representative of Uruguay, and it was a comment on the fact that I have used a statistic putting a link between beef and exportation and deforestation. But, you know, it brings me to something which is important. The problem is not the beef production. It's the way that you do it. And it is true that there are different ways to do it. And we, for example, what we are saying is that if we were to restore the 500 million hectares of abandoned agricultural land in the world today, you will be in a position to feed the world population by 2050, and you will sequester up to 20% of all the CO2 emissions per year. And on top, you would avoid 4 million hectares of deforestation every single year. Those are numbers which are easy. All that with an average cost of less than 300 euro per hectare of restoration into land which is converted from degraded to restoring. So the place to have cattle is not the problem. You have plenty of places available for cattle. It is whether you go for deforestation to raise your cattle, or whether you use degraded land and restore it to feed these cattle. This is the trade-off that we are talking about. So clearly it's not a problem of saying there should be no meat production. It is how you do your meat production. And I do take note of what Uruguay said, and I do agree with them. And actually, Uruguay is part of the 105 countries which have decided to go for LDN target inside UNCCD. And I hope that when the target will be ready, they will come at our next COP in October to explain how they did it. Now, on agroforestry, which was the second question put to me, yes, of course, we can go at very large scale now. And we have examples today which exist. Let me give you, for example, one project that I know well in China, which is the Leuze Plateau, which is a 4 million hectare program of China of land which was totally degraded, desertified, which has been turned into an agroforestry program in one end. And if you see that project, you can see that you can really put it at scale. We are talking 4 million hectares. And this project, moreover, has taken out of poverty 6.5 million people. Those are the statistics given by the World Bank on the ex post evaluation of the Leuze Plateau experience. And you have many others which are started like that. So people who say always, oh, yes, agroforestry, it's nice, but it can only work in a very small type of project, they are not right. We have experience now on very wide scale. And as you know, our next conference of the party of the convention will be held in China, in Inner Mongolia. And I hope that many of you can join us, because then you will be in a position to see and really see how you can turn deserts into land which is productive and which is giving jobs to people. Thank you.
Excellency Giorgio Conroti, President of the Republic of Fiji, Excellencies, Ambassadors, Permanent Representatives, Monique Barbu, Executive Secretary, UNCCD, Mrs. Rika Yokio, Senior Vice President, Metsä Group, distinguished guests, colleagues, friends, ladies and gentlemen. Let me congratulate you all for today's excellent discussion and thank our esteemed speakers whose inspiring remarks set the scene. And I think we didn't have much question is because they were so clear in their statements. Fully reflecting the theme of this year's International Day of Forests, we cover critical aspects of the forest energy nexus. You highlight how forest and energy solutions are significant to achieving the sustainable development goals, as well as their importance for positive climate outcomes under the Paris Climate Agreement. We emphasize the role of food fuel, a source of energy to billions, especially the rural poor, for cooking, heating, and generating electricity. Indeed, it is often the most affordable and locally available fuel to provide a cooked meal and better nutrition, boiled water and safe drinking, and a warm dwelling. The meeting explored how technological development and cutting-edge products, including liquid biofuels, could open new avenues for greening energy and a more sustainable future. Our discussion not only reminded us the complex service forests provide, from the raw materials for energy generation to contributing to hydropower through watersheds to helping save energy by regulating temperatures. We recognize that forests offer a much larger potential if sustainably managed. Inefficiencies across the production chain, from the management of the resource to the production of food energy, wood energy products and to the methods and devices for converting them to energy and making wood energy less green than it could be. My message to you is simple. More energy from wood should not require more wood for energy, but better wood energy. This should be our guiding principle when thinking about future actions. Ladies and gentlemen, with this in mind, let's recall important points from today's session. The following actions will help realize the full potential of food as an economically, social, and environment beneficial source of energy, and call on all of us to promote responsible policies that encourage long-term investment in the sustainable production of food energy, such as clear and equitable land tenure and use rights. Support technology transfer and foster an efficient, well-regulated wood fuel trade that generates revenue for sustainable forest management and improves rural livelihoods. Continue to increase the area of sustainably managed forests and community woodlots, thereby providing a basis for the production of clean, renewable, affordable, and reliable wood energy. Encourage the widespread use of clean, cheap, efficient stoves that minimize negative impacts on health and environment. FAO is committed to providing a neutral platform for negotiating and dialogue through its governing bodies, including COFO and the Regional Forestry Commission, as well as our unique linkage to the private sector and advisory committee on sustainable forest-based industries and the relevant statutory bodies. We encourage greater interaction and coordination among all the parties working to achieve sustainably managed forests and thus greater energy security and sustainability. And needless to say, FAO stands ready to collaborate and work together with member nations, international partners, and the broadest range of stakeholders to continue to promote sustainable forest management worldwide. Before concluding again, on behalf of the Director General, I would like to thank you all for having been here today. I would like to thank our interpreters, all of the colleagues who have contributed to the successful of this event. Again, thank our panelists, and I wish you a happy International Forest Day. Thank you.